Court will turn to the third case of the day, RJB Properties versus the Board of Education.
Good morning.
Mr. Cox.
Yes, may it please the court. The appeal before the court this morning is from the district court's grant of summary judgment to the defendants on two counts, one for equal protection violation and the other for, excuse me, due process. And it revolves around the denial of janitorial contracts to the to RJB, as well as what we've referred to as a de facto debarment of RJB. And, excuse me, the district court ultimately held with respect to the equal protection claim that there was no tribal issue of fact with respect to the board's finding of non-responsibility and that it was related to a legitimate state objective. On appeal, we believe that the district court erred because the alleged reasons for the non-responsibility determinations were present with other contractors but ignored by the board. So we have a difficult time understanding how they could be rationally related to an objective when it comes to RJB, but on the other hand, with these other contractors, they're ignored. And the second problem we had with the court's decision was that they seemed to ignore the real reason cited by the board in the contemporaneous documentation for these findings of non-responsibility, which was a March 28, 2001 memo, and instead focused on the after-the-fact reasons provided by the board.
RJB Properties, just the name, doesn't sound like a janitorial.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they come up with the name, Your Honor. I don't know. They've done other things besides janitorial.
That's one of the contentions raised by the board.
I'm not sure. I don't think the name threw the board off. I mean, they knew exactly who they were dealing with.
Yeah, that's one of the problems also.
I understand their position. Well, this court has recognized class of one cases when it comes to equal protection, and we believe this is a prime example of a class of one case. And in those cases, the party is should be protected by a wholly arbitrary act. And in this case, obviously, the wholly arbitrary act is the board's denial of two contracts that we know of, and as well as the blacklisting for all future awards. And this record supports that was in fact what occurred. That the board actually blacklisted them from consideration from any future awards.
And this whole argument you're making that you were stigmatized by the board.
Well,
that's part of it.
Well, that's more on the due process.
Right, it is on the due process, but I mean the facts are.
Yeah, at least with respect to the equal protection claim, the court seemed to criticize us because we focused too much on the fact that the board continued to deal with these other contractors. And we didn't address the reasons offered by the board. But as we tried to stress in the brief, and if the court would, the memo that the board relies on is on page 46 of the appendix. This is the Inspector General's confidential draft memo. And this is what's cited to by the board when they decided to deny these contracts to RJB. And as I said, it's a draft memo. Nothing ever became of it. This is back in 2001. No findings of wrongdoing were ever reached, and nothing was ever done. In fact, in the memo, it talks about that the investigation couldn't be concluded until they were able to obtain these documents from McMahon. Well, they went after McMahon with an administrative subpoena and then later dropped that action against McMahon. So for all intents and purposes, the investigation had ended, and no findings of wrongdoing had ever been made. But at the same time, they were using this memo in 2005 and 2006, I believe, and into the future to deny RJB awards of these contracts, while at the same time continuing to award the other contractors that are mentioned in this memo with a contract. As a matter of fact, in the record, there's a award of a multimillion-dollar milk contract to a joint venture just this past year, which is comprised of all the companies that are in this draft memo, McMahon's and Nick's and Behrman's. They formed a joint venture and were awarded a multimillion-dollar milk contract. So our position, I guess, is that how can this be a rational, rational basis for excluding RJB while at the same time they continue to award these contracts to these other contractors who are mentioned in this in the same memo? It just doesn't make sense.
Are they? Is the wrongdoing that's charged with RJB unique to RJB?
Well, first of all, and I don't want to stress again, they're just allegations since nothing was proven. But is it unique to RJB? I would say no, because if the court would look at the confidential draft memo, it talks about all four of these companies being involved in the same improper relationship or alleged improper relationship on various grounds. So it doesn't necessarily single out RJB. It talks about all four of them being involved.
You said they're just allegations that haven't been proven, but I thought that on this milk substitution business, 1%, 2%, that the board, I guess bottom line, was substantially overcharged on that contract. That is not a given here?
No, in fact, Your Honor, if you look at page 48 of the appendix, which is the third page of this memo that I'm talking about, it addresses the 1% milk issue. And if you look in the language that the Inspector General uses in the memo is that this was a bid anomaly, or this was something that, let me explain to you what it was. RJB included two different prices in its bid, one for 2% milk and one for 1% milk. The 1% was a higher price. The contracts were awarded on the basis of the 2% price. As they were performing the contracts, the schools started to order 1% milk. And we're paying more for the 1% milk. But the only thing RJB was doing was charging exactly what it included in its bid. It wasn't overcharging, but it was paying. It was charging exactly what it included in its bid. And that's undisputed. It's indisputed. That's in their own memo where you can find that. But there was never any conclusions of wrongdoing against RJB. It was, as I said, referred to as a bid anomaly. I don't know if that answers your question, Your Honor.
Well, I'm sure the other side is going to have something to say about that.
Okay. The issue is who authorized the delivery of the 1%. But as I understand it, when RJB would go to the schools, they'd give them a purchase order and say, we'd like, a couple dozen cartons of 1% milk. And then RJB would bring the 1% milk, and they'd pay, and they'd charge what they had in their bid for the 1% milk. So there's never any overcharging. It was simply what they included the prices that they had in their bid. That's what they charged.
Well, let's say that they were mistaken. There was no problem there. But if a mistaken reason for denying you this janitorial contract, that doesn't amount to a violation of the law, does it?
If they're mistaken,
yeah, they thought that, hey, these guys overcharged us on the milk deal, so let's not use them for the janitorial deal. So what if they were incorrect on the milk deal, that there wasn't any fudging or substituting of the milk at a higher price, but that's what they thought. So where do you go with it?
Well, I certainly don't think it's a rational basis to deny a contract to a contractor for, as you say, incorrect reason. And certainly they knew otherwise, Your Honor. They knew that they had done nothing wrong. I think at the very heart of this case, which bears out in the emails that we cited in our brief, and I can refer the board to those, or to the court to those emails on page 78 of the appendix. Right before Sean Murphy, the procurement official, went into this closed session, there was an email exchange between Mr. Murphy on his BlackBerry and Lynn Moore, who was another board official. And they were all set to award RJB this contract. And then there was some, and Ms. Moore, or Mr. Murphy says, let's keep him. By the way, do you mean law supports our decision to keep him, right? And then Ms. Moore wrote back, newsflash. Ellen Daly feels that even though OIG had two claims against RJB and that they were unsubstantiated, so they knew that they had been unsubstantiated, and they were never disbarred, that they are shady characters and that if we sign up with them, the OIG would for sure investigate and dig for dirt. So, I mean, you know, this was the real reason for the denial. They were concerned about another OIG investigation or, as they say, going up against the president of the school board. So there's some indication there that there was some animus on the part of the president against RJB. But these were the real reasons why they denied the contract. And it wasn't these after-the-fact reasons that the board came up with.
Cox, unlike Judge Evans, I'm guessing that maybe RJB stands for Ron Blackstone and perhaps his middle name.
Yes,
but
that's correct.
I'm a little intrigued. What does he do? In other words, why does the board, perhaps the board's learning, why doesn't the board just buy the milk from the dairy? He's able to procure these dairies? I'm just intrigued a little bit about the function of it all. If you don't know it, maybe the board's lawyer will.
Well, I'm sure the board will tell you that it's a front operation and it's a.
Well, I don't want to hear that if that's not the case. If you can tell me what Mr. Blackstone does, that a dairy executive doesn't do, I'm glad to hear it.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think I'm competent to answer that question.
Okay.
Because my involvement with RGB is strictly limited to this case, and I know that they.
That's fine.
They perform janitorial contracts. They do janitorial work. And they had in the past provided.
That's an interesting mix of responsibilities to the board, but it could be. This is America. You could be in both janitorial and the milk brokering business.
I mean, those are the things I know about. I don't think they do anything other than that.
Okay.
Can you just spend a minute on your due process argument? Because I can't find any evidence that the board's rescission of the RFP awards have stigmatized you. I know that, you know, if there was a FOIA request, someone could see that, but I can't understand how it actually made public.
Well, Your Honor, you know, obviously we had trouble, you know, going into this case. We didn't know, and as discovery went along, we'd hoped we'd find more information. But, you know, what we do know is that under the FOIA law in Illinois, all this stuff is available publicly. So, you know, the point that I tried to make in the brief is that even I don't believe the Seventh Circuit has addressed this issue.
So you don't think that Johnson versus Martin case applies, where we said that mere existence of damaging information, and that was in an employee's file, an employee who had been discharged, was not the equivalent of being made public and couldn't support a due process claim. Isn't that close to our very...
It's close, and I think I mentioned it in our brief.
And controlling.
That the Seventh Circuit had addressed this in the context of an employer's personnel file. And I had to reach way out and find a case in Virginia, with all due respect to the Seventh Circuit, that said that the personnel file is unique because it's something that's exempt from FOIA law anyway. So I kind of just wanted to raise that and leave it up to the court to, I don't know if it's make new law on that issue or what, but I couldn't quite say. Obviously, we take the position that because this information is available under the FOIA law, that it satisfies the public disclosure requirement. And that's the argument we raise in our brief. Now, as far as the other issue raised by the district court on the due process argument, that we didn't come forward and show that we'd been denied tangible, or there's no tangible evidence of denial of contracts. Well, I would just point, as I did in my brief, to the memo where it clearly states that the board says RGB is to be removed from consideration for any awards with the board. Any is the word that I would stress in that sentence. To me, that means any means any. It's a blacklisting or defective debarment, whatever you want to call it. I'm sure the board will say that, well, that just meant that particular one. Well, I don't buy that, and I don't think that's what they meant.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Louder.
Judges, counsel, Lee Louder on behalf of the Chicago Board of Education. I want to tell you what the difference is between RJB and the other companies with whom the board continues to contract. When the Inspector General went to talk to Mr. Blackstone, he told him he didn't have any invoices, any billing records, any contracts or leases that could substantiate that he'd done any work on those milk contracts, $20 million in milk contracts, and he can't give us a single document. By contrast, when we went to talk to the president of TNT, he cooperated with the investor, with the OIG. He told them that when Preferred came to him after they decided not to use RJB anymore, they offered him a deal that smelled pungent. And he said he told them he didn't really want that deal. He wanted to actually provide services. And so that's the difference between him and TNT. The difference between him and Total Facility is the same thing. Total Facility was forthcoming with the Office of the Inspector General, told them what the deal was. What's the difference between RJB and Preferred? Preferred got caught using a minority pass-through and paid a fine to the board. That's the difference between what RJB did and what these other companies did. The second thing I want to talk about is this continued statement that McMahon, that the board dropped its charges against McMahon. That's simply not true, and it's clear from the record that that's not true. The board got an order that it's a subpoena enforcement order saying, yes, McMahon has to turn over these documents to the board. McMahon appealed. It was McMahon's appeal, not the board's. So when that case got dismissed, what was left? An order saying that McMahon had to turn over these records to the board. Third point I want to make is this question about the OIG investigation, and it's only speculative. Well, I can only say that, you know, when they went to talk to this man, he wouldn't give them any information, and he had an obligation under the contract to do that. So can the board assume that that's not a good thing and take, is that a rational basis for us to decide that we don't want to contract with this man? I think it obviously is. In fact, it would be crazy for the board to continue to want to contract with someone who doesn't cooperate with them in this way. About the 2% milk, I want to talk about that too. The record does not show that they were authorized to provide this. What the contract says is that the board can substitute 1% milk for 2% milk. It doesn't say that RJB can do that. They were doing that. That was unauthorized. When they were caught doing it, they were stopped. The last point I want to make is on the liberty interest claim. This FOIA speculation, that's all it is. This court has said in Clark versus Maurer, that, you know, you could have a ticking time bomb in a file, but until it goes off, there's no harm to anyone's reputation. And there's no harm here to RJB's reputation because the bomb's still ticking. It's been 5 years. Nothing's happened. And as far as them losing any business opportunities, even assuming for the sake of argument that the board had decided never to contract with RJB again, which was not what the record shows because our chief financial officer said we would encourage them to file again. But even if that were the case, if we said we're never going to contract with you again, they still couldn't win their liberty interest claim because they already have contracts with the federal government. They have contracts with the City of Chicago, the Chicago Park District, and 50% of their business comes from non-government entities. So they just can't show that we've deprived them of future employment opportunities.
Let me ask you this. Has the board certainly has had the opportunity to assess fines against RJB if there were a debarment proceeding, because that's one way you can definitely get them off the table. No debarment proceedings were filed. No settlement agreements were filed with respect to the violations. And you're telling us now that the board has actually encouraged them to reapply for contract.
What the record shows is that chief purchasing officer, when she denied them the two janitorial contracts, told them they could continue to apply. I think that they haven't applied for any other contracts with the board.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is when you talk about some of these allegations, which you've outlined them and made fairly serious allegations, at least in my view, but there's been no debarment proceeding, no fines, no, you know, if they did substitute the 1% for the 2%, and that was in violation of the contract. I mean, isn't that a do them? Or
it would have been grounds for us to debar them. I think what
right.
The,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think what the OIG said was that they were no longer doing business with RJB, and they decided not to pursue it. I think that they stopped doing business with RJB in March of 01. That's what, if you kind of read between the lines, during that investigation with TNT, when TNT substituted for RJB, that was in March of 01, and that's when the OIG's report came out.
And so just in terms of this reading between the lines, just like the statements by this Mr. Thomas of TNT Food Services, was that ever investigated when he talked about it being a pass-through? Was there, other than his statement?
No, there was a settlement agreement that's part of our appendix showing that we entered into a settlement agreement with TNT and Preferred on that contract. that they agreed not to do that anymore.
Right. Oh, no, I understand as to them, but I'm saying TNT made the allegation about RJB and saying it was a pass-through. I'm asking, was any investigation done of RJB relating to the pass-through allegation?
I think we already had evidence that RJB was a pass-through from the March 01 and from, well, it started in 2000, but I think it was fairly well substantiated in 2001 when he couldn't provide a single document that showed he provided milk. But I don't see any reason to reopen the investigation at that point.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lauder. Mr. Cox?
Just a couple points. I just wanted to stress again, the board keeps alleging that Mr. Blackstone refused to cooperate. If the court looks at the documentation, that's not the case. Mr. Blackstone told the investigator that he didn't have the documents they were looking for, which is why they went after McMahon with this administrative subpoena action. Now, all I was able to uncover was that that action was dismissed at the appellate level, and I assume it was dropped, because it was either dead there or if they found documents that would have implicated RGPS, certainly they would have done something. But I think the court's questions beg another question. Why didn't the board ever do anything? They've had 5 years now, and they're claiming now that there's all this wrongdoing, but they've never given RGB any due process. They've never given them the due process that's outlined in the board's debarment policy manual. and this other issue that was raised by counsel, and I find it kind of curious. The board has sent letters to RGB as it when it notifies it that it hasn't been awarded the contract, but it says, you know, we urge you to continue to bid on our contracts or submit proposals to these RFPs. While at the same time, in their own documents, they've said RGB is to be removed from consideration from any awards with the board. So internally, they've blacklisted them, but at the same time, they're telling RGB, yeah, keep submitting your bids. You know, wink, wink, we're not going to look at them or consider them, but just keep sending them. I mean, there comes a point when they've got to treat RGB fairly and give them the due process that they're required to give them. At no point did the board ever come to RGB and allege wrongdoing or make charges against them or say we want you to enter into a settlement agreement with us. That never happened. They did that with these other companies, but that didn't happen with RGB. So basically RGB is just left hanging in the wind, waiting, you know, submitting bids on these contracts, but knowing full well now that they'll never get considered.
They are RGB continues to submit bids?
I'm aware, Your Honor, at least one in the last, I want to say, 6 months or so, I think since this appeal started, that they submitted a proposal on and that they were denied. And they received a similar letter. You know, we didn't accept your proposal, but we encourage you to continue to submit proposals in the future. Well, to what end, you know?
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Cox.
You.
Thank you, Ms. Lauder. The case is taken under advisement.